was a kid, every second year or so, we would make the 20-ish hour drive from Brisbane to Melbourne to visit family. This was in the days before climate-controlled SUVs, where you were three sweaty kids wedged along a back seat and you had maybe four tapes that would cycle through the tape deck. This is the reason why I know all of the words to Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. One of the bright spots of those long hours were the big things. First, there was the prawn at Ballina. Then there was the golden guitar at Tamworth. By the time we got to Ned Kelly and Glen Rowan, we knew we were basically home and hosed. I think I'd thought of these big things as kitschy throwbacks, but in recent months, there has been talk of building a giant pear three stories high in Shepparton, Victoria. So what is the deal with Australia's obsession with big things? Some people love them. Some people think they're tacky. Do they actually make a difference to the towns they're in? Well, Sarah Tate is big thing royalty. Her family owned the Big Potato in New South Wales. And Claire McCracken is from the School of Art at RMIT University. Claire's research focuses on art in public spaces. Claire, you are studying this, but you also have experience here. There was a push for a big attraction in your town.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for having me. I grew up in a small town called Myrtleford in Victoria, which is one of the many gateways to Australia's snowfields. And in the early 1980s, to put that township on the map and get cars that were passing through to the ski fields to pause and stop and spend money, there was a proposal to build a 17-metre giant snowman. And my father noted that this giant snowman would actually block the town's vision of Mount Buffalo, one of the great mountains of Australia. And so he contested the construction of that snowman, which turned into quite an ordeal. Passions were raised. We got threatening phone calls. It ended up down in the court system in Melbourne. Dad ultimately won just as I started primary school. And so my first nickname was Snowman Killer.
Oh my gosh. What an entree to the world of bullying. And I'm sorry that happened to you. What was your dad's objection, well, apart from the Mount Buffalo thing? Did he think it was tacky? Was your dad too classy for a snowman?
Well, he looked into the kind of business cases of big things and noticed that they weren't always successful. But he wins the case on the grounds that it would block what was actually the true tourist attraction of the township, which is this really beautiful mountain.
I love that you're following in your dad's footsteps by researching, like really looking at the numbers behind big things and whether they're successful or not. What do you think about Shepparton's idea of building the big pear?
Well, I think there's real merit in the idea because it's not just a big pear, it's also a museum that will be talking about the agricultural history of the region with a focus on the role that migrants have played in that. And there's significant merit in doing that. That's fantastic, particularly at this time. And of course, migrants continue to shape regional Australian and agriculture. Whether it has to be in the shape of a big pear is the ultimate question. And of course, really great architecture that's designed sensibly and heightens our attunement to our beautiful ecology and landscape can also be a really great way to stop a passing car in awe.
Mm. You are listening to Life Matters here on Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Claire McCracken, who's at RMIT University looking at art in public spaces. We're talking about big stuff, like literal big things on the sides of highways. I have a soft spot for the big prawn at Ballina. Tony says, I was gobsmacked the first time I drove past the big merino in Goulburn about 40 years ago. Ungerry in central west New South Wales, says another person, features a massive 800-kilogram fiberglass football, making it a notable attraction and symbol of the town's connection to the AFL. Clint says, I used to have a book as a kid in the 80s called It Really Is a Big Country that had all the big things in it. The more fiberglass monstrosities, the better, I say. Clint, well, Clint, I hope the potato was in your book because I'm joined by Sarah Tate, whose family owned the Big Potato. Sarah, you were born in the home of the Big Potato, but your family didn't own it yet.
That's right. Hi, Tegan. Yeah, I was born in Robertson and my parents actually had the local pub at the time. So I grew up in a town of maybe 1,000 people where the kind of biggest and most exciting thing was the big potato that we would walk past every day on the way to school. So I didn't become royalty until my 20s and have already abdicated. So it's been a real journey for our family with the big potato.
Talk to me about the acquisition of the potato, please.
So my parents had a little supermarket on the land that adjoined next to the big potato. And there was a bit of a skirmish, really, where there was it was a land grab, really. There was talk of someone buying that land and knocking down the big potato to put up a parking lot. Well, put down a parking lot for a business that was going to be next door. And my parents bought it at that point. And then it kind of became absorbed as part of their larger business. And they, you know, made it a little park, put up tables and flowers and things like that. So then it really firmly became part of the Tate family identity, which it always felt right considering our surname, you know?
Fair, fair. So there's a text here, someone saying the big merino in Goulburn is great. And then they say the big potato in Robertson sometimes steamed in the early morning, which prompted a local nickname. But the text doesn't tell me what the nickname is. Is it fit for radio?
I mean, it is. If one has cheap humour, I think people would call it the big T-U-R-D, because it's true, it did steam in the morning, so it's a beautiful foggy town. But my family have always, even before we had any real like proprietary connection to it, we just kind of thought that those jokes were cheap. I don't know why. There was just something like that bristled on the back of my neck.
Protect in relation the potato.
I know. Isn't it wonderful?
Claire, I want to know sort of how unique this obsession with big tourist attractions is. It's not just an Australian thing, is it?
No, you find big things globally, although they do particularly proliferate in the United States, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and South Africa. But what is unique is our name, Big Things, which you get in New Zealand as well. So
they call them Bug Things.
So Big Things, Bug Things, good point. Big Things mean both huge buildings that you can enter, but also sculptures that are very large that you might drive past, like your prawn.
Why?
Well, they grow out of the post-Second World War changes to economics in country towns. So country towns really have to diversify. They have to find ways to pull in tourists. And you also get the uptake of motor vehicles and the start of driving tourism. And so their response to the vision through the windscreen, an architectural response to the vision through the windscreen, and they're literally designed to stop passing cars in awe, get people to stop their car and take a photo. So the technology of the camera is also really important to their evolution. And as the road network proliferates, they expand, and as domestic tourism grows, particularly in the 80s and 90s, we see a huge proliferation of them. And it's interesting, the contemporary ones quite often are a bit smaller, and I think that's often a response to the mobile phone and the selfie, because if you try and get the huge merino in a selfie, it's virtually impossible. But the big bogan in Ningen, quite easy to get in the selfie framing. So, yeah, a result of the motor vehicle, but also the development of the camera.
I've got I'm Googling the big bogan as we speak because I've never seen it before. Oh, it's just like a guy and a dog. Echoing what you're just saying there, Claire, one person says, my favourite big things are the ones that are sort of not quite big enough, just kind of like medium things, which people have obviously thought were a really good idea, and going ahead they sort of just degrade in the weather and look a bit terrible and sad. I wonder why that's so attractive to you, Texter. If you've got a follow-up sort of, I wonder if there's a sort of, I don't know, ennui or nihilism sort of vibe coming through there. I personally love the moderately sized avocado in the Northern Rivers in New South Wales. Another person says the big pineapple was a wonderful experience as children, going on the little green train through the beautiful glowing fields of pineapples, eating pineapples and ginger and going to the nearby sugar growing plantations and factories too. Brian from Brisbane also loved the big pineapple at Nambour, always knew we were on the Sunshine Coast, also went there on a primary school excursion. I'm now 60 years old. So Sarah, I've got to know, obviously you have a loyalty to the potato that runs deep in your blood, but are there any other big things that you favour?
I really love the big Merino as well. I think that it's a beautifully executed big thing. But I also have a soft spot for the medium-sized decaying big things, the medium things. I think what I really love about them is that it shows that we're a country of dreamers. You know, people really intend for these things to be something special. It's a place where families can kind of stop and have these photos that go in photo albums if they still print photos. I'm also kind of fond of that big bogan in Ingen for the same reason. They're all these little markers that show like you're progressing through your journey. You're on the way. You're getting closer. You're seeing all these things that let you know that you're reaching your destination. There's not one that I don't love. I don't know if I have always been warm toward them because of where I grew up, but I just think that they show such aspiration, even if they're not perfectly executed.
Claire, I love that line that Sarah just said about it shows that we're a nation of dreamers. How does that fit with your work?
It does. I agree. There's often an entrepreneurial and aspirational desire with big things. And a lot of them are, you know, a single farmer with a dream to stop a car, although there are also ones like the Big Bogan that have been supported by local government. But of course, the really big objects we build in space do come to define regional Australia. And so I have also critiqued the way in which they might signal one history over another or one way of being. And it is, for example, very noticeable that all of the big things we've built, and even if they're not anatomically masculine, like the big ram, the big merino, are male. And so you start to signal the kind of masculine over the feminine regional Australia. And those people in regional Australia know that the outmigration, particularly of women, is quite significant. So while I think they do demonstrate a kind of dreamer and an entrepreneurial attitude and a way of making things happen and keeping your town on the map, when you blow something up big, it also starts to signify things and it starts to kind of signify one history over multiple histories. So that's where we can start to get into a tangle.
I've never looked at the prawn that closely. So with the age of selfies, I was struck before when you said the thing about the kind of combined technologies of cars, highways and cameras in the sort of mid-20th century as sort of supercharging this big thing. But now we're obsessed with taking photos all the time. We're obsessed with social media. You mentioned selfies before. Do you think that there's going to be like another golden age of big things because we're taking photos on the road all the time?
Yes, and I think they've also benefited of the increase in cost of international travel post-COVID. So we are hitting the roads again and we're hitting the roads locally. And if you look at where they're being constructed, it's short distances from major metropolitan centres, Shepparton, 2.5 hours from Melbourne. So when you map them, when you put the dots down, there are notable exceptions and some in very remote areas, but they tend to proliferate where urban dwellers might do day trips or 3-day trips.
Thank you so much, Sarah and Claire. Sarah Tate's family owned the Big Potato in New South Wales, and Claire McCracken is from the School of Art at RMIT University.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music, and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.